Brian Westbrook was another welcomed addition to the Eagles offense Saturday. His presence is all positive after off-season ankle surgery that kept him out of training camp. We'll have more on Westbrook in just a moment. Welcome to Sports Rise. I'm John Boren.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports. From that first ball game with your folks, to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph, or maybe even taking your own kids to their first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us all back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel, our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so check us out. Museum of Sports show brought to you by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me as always every week from his sports cave in Villanova, he is our guide and our mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, and he never lets us forget it, founder of the Museum of Sports, and he's the author of the new book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showcase. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. Hi, Lou.
Well, I'll tell you, here we go again. The Sixers were going to win the championship last year, according to the media.
Yes.
And you know how that went. And now they've got the Eagles easily winning the East and loaded, stacked, and a sure Super Bowl, not just a contender, but they're going to do it. So I'm putting all my money on them that I lost on the 76ers.
Who knew I'd live long enough to see all of it in one season? How exciting.
Yeah.
And from her sports guest room, wherever the hell you are, Susan, in
Office.
South Jersey, the Museum of Sports Director of Community Outreach, Miss Susan Baxter. Hi, Susan.
Hey, well, I'm here. I didn't win the Mega Millions, so I'll try again tomorrow night.
So you're saying you would have quit your volunteer
and I would buy the Flyers and fix them. That's on the top of my list.
$1 billion.
Yeah. They're not even worth, well, let's not go there. We'll talk more about that later.
Yeah. Well, coming up today, he is Mr. College Sports from the inside and out, administration player, and he's got a strong opinion on paying high school players money for a name, image, and likeness. Bill Bradshaw back with us here on the Museum of Sports show. And what's hot and what's not in the memorabilia world with our own king of sports collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection. And he's our proud partner in the Museum of Sports. Nick DiPaccia Jr. is going to be here. But up first, he was NBC Sports Philadelphia's guy for many, many years with some TV stops in Harrisburg and Detroit along the way, unless I screwed that up. Now living a life of leisure in sales with Forever Media, a big Museum of Sports show. Welcome to the Emmy and Edward R. Murrow Award winner, John Boren. John, welcome to the Museum of Sports show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Was that an overblown intro or did I get all the high points?
That was good. It was a little short. I think I would have dragged it up.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for coming, everybody.
Yeah, it's all the time we have.
That's the abridged version, so you can go with it.
Oh, God. Excellent. Excellent. Well, nice to see you. You've been missed on the air. And, you know, John, you and I both worked in television news and sports for many, many years. And probably on the news
recording
side, the news guys were always cursing the sales guys because the sales guys are saying, why do we have to pay this talent all this exorbitant money? And then the folks in the news and sports division are always going, well, if you didn't have a product to sell, you wouldn't have a job. So is it a little weird having your shoe on the other foot these days in the sales end of the spectrum?
It's a little weird in that sense because, right, every time, you know, we were on, we always had to give a mention to who the sponsor was, Colonial Nissan. I mean, you sit there and recited it for 13 years. So I almost know them all, you know. But it's refreshing in the sense that what I tell people is that when you get into the news business, you don't understand the sacrifices involved. You don't, you know, it's hard to explain working holidays and weekends and nights, not getting home till 1 o'clock in the morning, not seeing your kids except for maybe an hour before they go to school in the morning. Yeah. So being in sales now gives me, you know, having that nice standard job to where, you know, I can work 8:30 to 5, get home, be there for dinner and see the kids off in the morning. So everybody talked about how great it was, and now I get to finally experience it.
Yeah, there's some semblance of normality. Yeah, because we all know that television news and sports are not necessarily conducive to long lives or long marriages or long anything else's. And so congratulations, and you've extended your end date by at least 10 to 12 years. It'll start to offset all the days you lost in your years in TV. Hey, I wanted to sort of start off with the Philly sports obituary of the day, or it's been at least over the last few weeks, as we've seen numerous obituaries written on the Flyers and their demise. And I didn't know if you had sort of written one or written them off as well, or if you're a firm believer in some sort of resurrection.
Well, I mean, I think that everybody, you don't have to venture too far to see that everybody has sort of dug this team a grave, you know, considering what they did and what they did not do.
Yeah.
Free agency. I mean, you know, I think the thing that bothers me about the Johnny Gaudreau is when you look at this organization, and you know, the hockey community is a very small community, and I think that Lou knows when Mr. Snyder was around, they had, you know, the Flyers had a great reputation in terms of attracting free agents. Free agents wanted to come to Philadelphia because of Ed and how much he meant to the organization, how much he cared, and how well he treated the players. And over the last 10 to 12 years, that reputation started to go south, obviously, because Ed's no longer there. And, you know, you have more of a corporate takeover and more of a corporate feel to it. Yep. So when you have an opportunity for a guy like Johnny Gaudreau, who was clearly the number one free agent out there, and a guy who wanted to come home and was probably willing to take a discount.
Yeah, we're going to call you.
Lou, you're taking some personal calls there?
Before you come on.
No.
We got John Boris on right now.
Yes, we do, and you're on too.
Guy with Comcast Sportsnet, and
I got to ask about you. You mentioned that sort of going from the family thing to the corporate thing.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen that, you know, not just in the Flyers, but you can make the argument in franchises around the country. And it just seems to be, you know, not just a fad. I mean, it really does seem to be a money driven trend.
It's definitely a bottom line driven entity now, to where, you know, they look at what's the bottom line and how can they cut and streamline things to where it's, you know, they're milking these companies and corporations for, you know, wherever they can get the dollars. And the personal feel gets lost when that happens. And, you can just see it from the Flyers organization to NBC Sports Philadelphia and everywhere in between that's typically what happens. And I think the consumer is the one who ultimately pays the price, because at least, you know, they know what they've come to remember. They know what they've come to appreciate.
Yep.
When it's no longer there, you know, they're the ones that feel left behind. And eventually, you know, they're those consumers are going to leave. They're very brand loyal, but if you're not giving them what they come to expect, they will leave.
Yeah, what stories do you think they're telling each other in the front office and in corporate? Because, you know, it was empty last year. I went to quite a few games, and it was empty in the Wells Fargo Center for the games.
Yeah, I mean, all I know is that they brought some of the other guys, some of the former Flyers, back into the mix, and we're talking to these guys and getting their perspective and their opinions on what needed to be done. And that was a big reason why they hired John Tortorella to come in and coach the team, because I think accountability was something that was severely lacking with this team, along with, I think, the character of this team. So that's something that they want to get back to, and wanting to establish a brand identity to who they really are. And I don't even think people would sit there and say, well, what are the Philadelphia Flyers anymore? This organization has a long history here in Philadelphia, and it starts with passion, and it starts with winning, and it continues down the line to where, you know, they want that ruggedness, that to know that if you're going to come to Philadelphia, you're not going to walk out of here without taking a few lumps. And that, I don't think that's really been the case over the past 3, 4, 5 years.
Now, John, a lot of people ask me, what do you think Ed Snyder would have done? And I guarantee you, he wouldn't have sat on his duff all last season while this was going on, a 10-game losing streak, a 13-game losing streak. I don't know if that was this year or 2 years ago or what, but they've never fallen so far from the fans. And the fans voted with their feet last year and stopped coming to the games. The organization made faux pas in not honoring people, honoring the wrong people, putting the wrong person up on the board when it was somebody else who had died. It was just unbelievable. And the fan, they had the most rabid 17,000 or whatever what number it is exactly, 19-some, for years. Ed Snyder would have made a splash in the offseason to get the people back. He would have gone on the road last year. People would have been fired a lot sooner, and players would have been shaken up. He would never have stood for that. He had too much pride, and the fans know that. And that's you're aware of all the social media stuff that goes on, and the people are just disgusted.
Yeah, they are. And I think that the Comcast, or whether NBC Universal, they look at this and they don't realize that that these are lifelong fans that know the history and have been around from the 70s and 80s, that it's a niche fan. It's a niche fan group within the Flyers. And that if you alienate, some of the alumni that's come through the building, or, take, for instance, Lou Nolan, who, he was down there on the glass as the PA announcer, and then they moved him upstairs. It's just little things. And those little things get around. I mean, it's a small community, but they talk about it, because they're all connected throughout the community, and word gets around, and the reputation becomes established, and it's hard to reverse that. You talk about love and trust in a relationship. You can spend 20 years loving somebody, but the second you start to abandon their trust, that's hard to get back. You can ruin a 20-year relationship in the span of a few months.
My first wife would back that up, I believe.
Yeah. Well, it seems like everything that Ed Snyder did over, his 50 years or owning the organization, it's all been reversed over the last 8 to 10.
That's exactly true. Well, they did do a nice job honoring Lou Nolan for his 50 years. They did a fantastic job. But telling him when he came back after the pandemic that he's going to go from the first row to above the last row. His head is hitting the ceiling now, and he really doesn't know why. And I spoke to him recently, and he said, look, I do whatever I'm told. He said, I'd like to come back downstairs, but I don't know. I mean, it'd be nice if they leveled with people. And it's just one more thing. Like you said, it's a little thing, but it adds up.
Yeah. And little stories and things where people have been, somebody like a Lou Nolan and other personnel who have been lifelong, figureheads with this organization, they don't get that warm and fuzzy feeling, and really you guys, I thought the Flyers were so good at being ambassadors for some of the generation, and having, Bob the Hound Kelly and Bernie Perron. And I know they still come back around here, but I don't get the sense that it's the same way as it was 10, 12 years ago when they were really still embedded into the organization.
Oh, yeah.
And getting back to that Johnny Gaudreau conversation, I mean, would it have been great to have him here? Yeah, but who would have been around him? Who would have been on his line? Like, who? We don't have the caliber to support his play. We're our style right now. I mean, Tortorella, hey, if I'm going to be excited about one thing, it's going to see what he does. Yeah. And we had Sam Carcitti on last week who said he's mellowed a little bit, but I want to see what he brings in the locker room and with this team.
All right, well, so I want to back up just a second. As far as Gaudreau, so I've tried to look at this from the general manager standpoint. It had to be one of two things, because general managers, through all 32 teams, they all know who are the potential free agents. They know – they would sit there and be lying to you if they said, well, we had no, we didn't know Johnny Gaudreau wanted to come here or whoever the case may be. They put feelers out there. These guys know. I mean, they're smart. They know that the potential guys. Now, sometimes these free agents will sign last minute. There's nothing you can do about it. But if you're Chuck Fletcher, there's one of two reasons why. You either A, you didn't feel like that he was worth the average annual contract that you were going to pay out to him, whether that was $9 million a season or $10 million a season. Or secondly, to your point, is you didn't feel like you had the talent around to surround him to make him successful on this particular team. And if that's the case, then you're just throwing $9 million to win. What I think that is a complete contradiction from where Chuck Fletcher was is he said, I think prior to the trade deadline was, what's this team really missing? Well, we're missing, three or four high caliber top line players. Well, you had an opportunity to sign one of those players and you failed to do it. And you could have probably have gotten it on a hometown discount, knowing that Johnny Gaudreau wanted to be back here and wanted to be with family. And you still passed on the opportunity. And to sit there and say, well, you know, we couldn't unload James Van Riemsdyk's contract is the reason why. Well, you've known about James Van Riemsdyk's contract for a while now. And to sit here and get to the 11th hour and say, well, we couldn't get it done because of this contract. I'm not buying that.
That's not the kind of move this organization will make. Ed Snyder would have made that move because he knew it would work and it would energize the fans. And that's what you got to do. One of the excuses they put out was that we don't want to give up a bunch of young people. And also we're building slowly, you know, and we don't want to make and so they did nothing.
Well, but if you take a look and kind of going to my point before is it's much harder now for the Flyers to obtain these top line players because and there's going to be quite a, if you look at potential free agents next season, some good ones that are out there, but it kind of goes back to my point is that if the Flyers want to obtain some of those top line players, they now have to do it through the trade, through acquiring and trading draft picks, trading players. Ristolainen, Ellis, go down the list. They got Atkinson for Voracek. They're now having to acquire the players that they want by making trades because they're not getting it through free agency. So that's the first thing that's coming out. Secondly, I think over the last 12 years, and you can even go back to when, they made the trade for Chris Pronger. And look, it was absolutely unfortunate what happened. But when you start bleeding draft picks for a win now mentality, it's eventually going to catch up with you. And you couple that with some of the bad decisions that I think Ron Hextall made with some of his drafting. You just can't throw away first round picks and expect that you're eventually going to succeed. It will always catch up to you. And I think that's now why you're going to see that the Flyers are probably going to hit this swell for about 2, 3, 4 years at least until they start drafting and developing talent at a very – at a very high level again, because until you start doing that, there's no way to develop a championship team, not doing it through trades, not hoping to nail a free agent here and there.
And you talk about drafting and development. We're past the All-Star break in the Phillies season. Do you see them making the playoffs? I mean, are we going to have anything to look forward to going into the fall?
I thought that they had a lot of momentum after the managerial change. But it seems like that they've sort of kind of plateaued with that.
Yeah.
Look, to me, what gets you through the August and September is top-notch pitching, from your starters down to your bullpen. And, I think sometimes Aaron Nola's inconsistency as a number two can be a little concerning. Yeah. I think they're going to be close. I just don't know if they haven't – without having Bryce's bat in the lineup, I just don't know if they have enough punch to get it done.
And what about Eagles? Yeah, everybody's getting swept up this sounds like a Donovan McNabb style, development, and the pieces are gradually being put in place for a run this season. I just don't see it.
Yeah, that's hard to say. Look, the only thing that I think is going to keep the Eagles in it is the fact that that division show up and down. It's not one of the strongest divisions in football. So I think that the team that comes out of there can be 9-8 or 10-7 again. I think the Cowboys have holes, just like the Eagles have some holes. But to me, I think if you're strong, you're able to you're strong up front, your front seven, defensive front seven on your offensive line, because I think that's where the core is of any football team. If they can secure that and not, because once you start losing bodies in the trenches, things start to, that's where the foundation starts to crack. And when that happens, and so I think if they could stay healthy in that area, Jalen Hurts wants to be great, and he puts in the time to be great. Now, whether that's going to transcend and translate on the field, you know, he's got to take the next step. So if that happens as well, look, I think there's just a lot of excitement, but at the same time, you're only going to go as far as your quarterback takes you, and I think Jalen Hurts has got to take that next step.
And you said 9-8 or 10-7 in that division. That could be a division winner, John.
That's what I mean.
That could win it. I could win it outright.
Yeah, you sweep the Cowboys and you go 9-8 or 10-7, and I think you could win the division.
Exactly. Well, hey, I got to ask you before we go, and I give hell to all the sports guys who have been on, you know, that, you know, over the years, you know, this is the Museum of Sports show about sports memorabilia, collectibles. What memorabilia is in your collection that you perhaps obtained over the years, John, from various locker rooms and trainers and the such?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the personal ones that obviously that are unique to me would be just photographs in and around the locker room, interviewing some of the players, some of the stuff that I have. I've never been a big collector. I mean, I love history. I love history. In fact, Lou will tell you, I was one of the first guys to do a story when they were trying to talk about the history of Sports Museum and went around the big, you know, the warehouse and talked about it. So I was excited. So I love the historical side, but I think if there's one piece of memorabilia that I have had since I was a kid that I will never get rid of, and it'll always be, it's the one piece that I have an autographed Nolan Ryan baseball, because when I was a kid, Nolan Ryan was he was everything. Like in fact, there's a documentary getting ready to come out on him, and they just don't make them. They don't make athletes like Nolan Ryan anymore.
Well, I was going to say, we'll ask our King of Sports Collectibles, who's the partner in the Museum of Sports, what that would be worth, Nolan autographed baseball. What year would that have been?
I think I got that in 1991.
All right. Yeah. Because what we've done is we've made a few folks fall out of their chairs with Nick's spot appraisals, and it's always fun to see cardiac arrest live. So, well, listen, TV sports guy, John Bork, we cannot thank you enough for being on the Museum of Sports show, and, we'll shoot you an email with whatever Nick Jr. says that thing's worth. But you said you'll never part with it, correct?
I'm not going to part with it. Yeah, I'm not. Trust. And I do have baseball cards going back to the 1970s and 80s. And I'll just hand that down to my kids over the time. So
I'm glad to hear that. But if you do decide to sell it, we get 10%.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Well, then make sure you mark it up. You know, 10%. We make up for that. So,
John, thanks so much, man. Come back anytime.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Take
good
care.
To see you, John. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible donation, or better yet, buy a copy of Lou's new tell-all book about his time at the Spectrum with the Flyers. Portion of the proceeds is going to benefit the museum, and you can be a part of Philly's sports shrine today. Well, when we come back, does paying high school athletes for their name, image, and likeness just seem to have corruption written all over it? That, when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, back in a couple of minutes.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And
And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Pierre Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Last summer, lawmakers in Pennsylvania passed legislation allowing college athletes to sign endorsement deals.
And now high school athletes could soon be on their way toward profiting off their image and fame.
Well, we're back on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We're brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter. And you heard in that little news clip off the top there that, you sort of knew that when NCAA and college sports sort of opened the door for athletes to profit off their name, image, and likeness, that it was going to drill down to the high school level. And PIAA, Pennsylvania Interscholastic Athletic Association. I always screw up that acronym.
Yeah.
They, I guess, have given preliminary indications and maybe an early vote that they may entertain that option for Pennsylvania high school athletes. And our next guest, as soon as he pops up in our Zoom window, has some strong feelings about that. Longtime administrator and athlete, really, with Temple and DePaul and where else was he? LaSalle. And,
LaSalle, yeah.
Yeah. Bill Bradshaw.
Good athlete in his own right, too.
Exactly. Baseball player, right?
Baseball player, and I think he got into the minors and almost had a yes. shot. Also, his teammate, it was Sal, Fran Dunphy. One played short and one played second, and they went on to greater things, but not professional players.
Yeah. But you had to know, and we've talked about this, and we've had folks on talking about the name, image, and likeness thing at the college level, Lou. And I brought it up them, and NCAA has gone to great lengths to sort of insulate players. Yeah, there's been occasions where alumni are given money under the table or what have you, or underwriting or subsidizing some of the athletes. But sort of bringing it out in the open, creating contractual arrangements, representation. We talked about it with some of our betting folks that, it just opens up all sorts of doors to, folks, not only spectators voting or betting in game, but players betting in game on their own performance or their team's own performance.
I think this is going to be a disaster. High school kids or college kids are immature, as are some of the pros in the NBA and other major leagues. And you get down to the high school level, these kids are in gangs. They're intimidated by other people. They've got parents who may not be a great influence. And I think it's putting way too much pressure on a kid who wants to go out and play basketball.
Well,
they want the money, of course, and they can use the money. I get that part, but
yeah, it's just, and we've talked about this before, is that college sports have made massive amounts of money off of their athletes, and then the athletes, a small percentage go off to the pros. Some may have extended careers, many don't. But many just go off to some other field. You know, maybe some do well as an entrepreneur or what have you, but many don't. And any monies that were made during their collegiate careers, they never saw a dime other than, you know, a full ride. And even then, in some cases, that doesn't cover everything. And I'm just wondering, bringing it down to the high school level, you're going to have a whole generation who just, you know, they'll declare eligibility in their freshman and sophomore years of high school. And
why can't it be middle school?
Exactly. Well, you know, there you go.
Some of these kids are really good athletes at that point, and then some of them have almost man bodies. Or lady bodies. But it's, to me, I don't see how you can control it.
Now, it would change the dynamic too, because, yep. You know, you play sports when you're young for fun, you know, and then you add money to it. That takes the fun right out of it.
Yeah. But then you might have agents and trainers and folks at the professional levels, or even the college levels, you know, declaring eligibility for college. You know, as a freshman or sophomore in high school, I just wonder if all sorts of gates or floodgates are going to be open. But you can have folks just sitting there going, well, you know, by the time we get them, you know, in the pros, they've already been banged up for 4 years, and some have shown, you know, being prone to injury. But boy, if we can get them younger and fitter and with less wear and tear, I can almost hear that discussion taking place, as sort of bizarre and cruel as that sounds.
Well, it's already going off the rails because the alumni are pooling money to hire the best players.
Yeah.
At major universities. And the richer universities who have the biggest alumni who, you know, have never been not accused of doing whatever they can to get the right person into their campus. They're buying players. They're absolutely buying players. And then there's some guy in Texas says he's going to give the entire team $25,000 each.
Yeah. Well, that's walking around money. Nothing wrong with that. Who was the youngest player the Flyers ever drafted or traded for, or brought on?
Oh, they had 18-year-olds, but they would play, you know, they didn't come up to the big club. They would be with in the minors or the juniors, and then the Phantoms bring them along. You know, you rarely see a real young guy in the, unless he's a wunderkind.
Ventures was 20.
Because
he held out for a year.
Like Gretzky, you know.
Yeah.
But
soccer, sometimes you see the wunderkinds, as you're talking about, you know, make it to various levels of pros.
That's right.
But I just wonder if, you know, and you take that 16, 17, 18 year old and he, you know, excels and makes it to a pro team at some level, gets injured. And then, you know, what happens to him? He's sort of a castaway. Yeah. He may have made a little bit of money along the way. But then does he go back to college? Does he, you know, go off and drive a truck in Philadelphia, Mississippi, or, you know, what happens to him?
It's all about the Bucks. And like I mentioned before, the alumni, we'll go to any length to see their teams win. And you got these big, big schools, Alabama and Ohio State and Texas, Oregon, where they've got huge. I mean, the Nike owner is behind Oregon. He'll do anything.
Well,
any way you look at it, it's ugly. I mean, look at Allen Iverson. His whole family benefited on his, you know, his success. So.
I think they should give the money to people like me. You know, I can't influence anyone, and I'm not going any place, and you can trust me.
Blah, blah. Yeah. But it's, you know, we I know we've discussed this before, is, you know, the pro sports, the NFL, I think some of the other leagues have done a better job at having sort of like, you know, how to be a pro athlete making, you know, tens of millions of dollars 101. You know, and you know, don't let a family member be in charge of your finances. Don't let your local pastor, you know, negotiate your contract. Hire a professional. Now, that's not to say that there aren't some ne'er-do-wells in sports agency.
No.
But for the most part, you know, you could probably, you know, through word of mouth, find someone who's reliable. But at least, you know, learning how to save, invest. Don't get taken for, you know, bogus investments. You know, invest in a car dealership, invest in the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah.
Things that typically derail these finances.
Ryan Howard's brother, Ryan sued him for taking his money, his own brother.
Wow.
And I think there was another relative involved. I'm not sure, but that breaks your heart.
Yeah. Well, I'd still say the best, 30 for 30 I've ever seen on ESPN was the best that never was, about Marcus Dupree, the phenomenal running back at the Oklahoma Sooners. And then, his mother controlled which coaches came onto the front porch, and they paid a certain amount to do that. And then if you wanted to go in the living room and meet with mom and with Marcus, you paid a little bit more to go in there. The local pastor was sort of in charge of the payments and the bank accounts and that sort of thing. And when Marcus was injured, I can't remember if he was in the USFL at that point or where he was, and needed money, he would always get money. But eventually the pastor stopped returning his calls. Suddenly, default notices for bank loans and hundreds of thousands of dollars began to show up. And he realized that his own family was bilking him and taking out loans in his name. And he was none the wiser. And when I said going back and driving a truck in Philadelphia, Mississippi, that's where Marcus Dupree is, I believe, to this day, once his sports career ended. It's just absolutely heartbreaking. Don't let family handle your money if you're going into sports. But at any rate, it's college athletes, if they don't think they're having a pro career or whatever, I don't begrudge them making some money. I just hope it doesn't derail their education. For the high school athletes, I'm not sure that's going to be beneficial at any level. And I'm just sort of surprised that
I'm shocked that they're allowing that. I mean, it might be a constitutional thing. You have to do it. But I understand the colleges, because it's multi-billion dollar business. The NCAA has lost complete control finally, and it's like a free for all. It's like the Wild West right now.
Well, and I'm not surprised that Texas was leading the way on this sort of thing, because their high school football has been an institution for longer than I've been alive. But I was just stunned to see Pennsylvania fall in line with that.
Well, how about the Penn State? Quarterback Clifford called a secret meeting and brought in a representative of a group that wanted to, I'll use the word, unionize the players. Yeah. And one of the coaches walked in and saw this and reported it to the coaching staff. And Clifford says, we have to explore everything. I mean, my God, the players are going to unionize now?
Yeah. Now, I didn't realize this. I guess last November, New Jersey's high school sports governing body approved a name, image, and likeness proposal by a 35-1 vote, and it went into effect January 1 of this year. And I would love to see how this is manifesting itself, because I'm wondering if the school districts and the athletic programs, if they're going to be the ones helping to broker these deals, if that's why they're so quick to get in on this, is somebody's put together a model that says, hey, school districts, you can profit off of this. If you're suffering and your legislature's not giving you enough money, by goodness, approve a name, image, and likeness proposal, and you'll profit too. I mean, I think that would be horrific if
it happened. There should be an ethical violation there. That's got to be a thin line right there.
But it just goes back to the money. If it's a revenue, they can't get television contract money in high school, but if they can get name, image, and likeness money in high school, why the hell not?
Next thing you know, they'll be legalizing marijuana.
And the state gets a cut of that.
That's why they did
And a lot
supposed to go toward our transportation. Our bridges and roads are horrible.
Yeah, well, we got billions coming to fix all that.
Well, I don't know. I would just assume it, that it just seems to have happened so quickly, and I just don't see an upside to it. And I think school districts and athletic associations are going, oh, you may not see an upside, Mr. Shimel, but we do.
Well, we'll try to get Bill Bradshaw in next week because he's working in this field with, advising some of the leagues and the NCAA and other people. athletic directors, you know, how to handle these things. So he's got a firm grip on it. He's a man of integrity. And
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Maybe he has the answer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's out in a golf course somewhere in the suburbs. So, hey, when we come back, our King of Sports Collectibles, Mr. Nick DiPaccia Jr. with the Museum of Sports Show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a moment.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Perrant, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by DiPaccia Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas DiPaccia is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas DiPaccia, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednarik, Bernie Perrant, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DiPaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Hey, up next, our King of Sports Collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, valued at hundreds of quintillions of dollars. We've lost track, I believe. Ladies and gentlemen, our partner in the Museum of Sports, Mr. Nick DiPaccia Jr. How are you, Nick?
Doing great. Dog days of summer, so we're all hanging in there.
Golly. Well, I'll tell you what. It's the thing that amazed me X number of years ago when ball player shoes, and in particular Nike, because of the massive marketing campaign behind them and some of the early, you know, endorsements they got or gave out to various athletes. Michael Jordan, I guess, sort of was the wedge that created this this phenomenon, is just the whole shoe value thing. We've had some collegiate shoes that sold for, what, several hundred thousand dollars in the past few years, Nick. When and how did that start, and who was sort of the progenitor of these massively collectible and valuable shoes?
Well, we're more focused on game-worn memorabilia. So memorabilia as Jordan shoes, I'm not really sure who was the person that put them on the map besides Mike himself, obviously, but who broke values up. We're like I said, we're more focused on game used memorabilia, and we have actually Jordan's shoes that he wore during playoffs, full uniform. I mean, and I understand the appeal of like the Jordan that year. And in a way, it's like each one's like a piece of art. People who collect sneakers, it's like having an art collection, and everything, like, it's limited edition and it's different designs and colors. But having the shoes that he wore during the playoffs in 1996, I think that has history behind it. I mean, that's a whole piece of history where his sweat was pouring from his feet.
Wow. If that isn't an appetizing selling point, I don't know what is.
His valuable sweat.
I guess. So,
and some of those sneakers are really like nice designs and cool looking. So I don't want to minimize collecting sneakers because it's people collect sneakers. I just I don't know much about how the value has been driven so far up.
So what the pair that you have, can you say what the value is on those? Or can you say what you paid or whatever you're comfortable saying?
Well, that was a long that was a while ago. We actually got them. That had to be in the early 2000s. So what we paid for them, I'd have to go back and look at the records. But the shoes themselves, let's put it this way. Shoes with the jersey shorts, the warm-up jacket, and the warm-up pants, we have all of that. It's close to if not over six figures, all that together. Yeah.
Good gravy.
Well, the Wall Street Journal had an article yesterday with the headline, Flipping Air Jordans is No Longer a Slam Dunk. And they said that the things that sold for big money in past years are now selling for 20% of that. So I don't know why I didn't read the whole article yet, but there are so many things. I didn't know people flip sneaks, you know, but I guess there's a market for everything. But there was another article in the Inquirer yesterday or maybe even today that a New Jersey man who owns a waste management company. So I fear that's not you. Has a 1952 Mickey Mantle mint card that he bought. Apparently, he forgot about it and just rediscovered it. He bought it many, many, many years ago for $50,000, and now it's expected to go for $10 million, which would set a record for the highest value of a sports card ever. So, that's pretty wild, isn't it?
Is his name Tony Soprano? Wasn't he in waste management?
Yeah, I was just going to say. It was.
Well, that was a different question. Type of waste. I'm going to waste you.
Would that have been, Nick, would that have been presumably a rookie card?
Oh, no, the 52 Mantle, the 52 Topps Mantle. I believe that was his second year because I think 51 was his first year, if I'm not mistaken. But 52 Mantle is one of those iconic cards along with the Honus Wagner T206 where it's just for as long as I can remember, it's been the most sought after card in at least that era, if not of all time now. Obviously, if it goes for $10 million, then that's going to break all kinds of records, like Lou said. But the 52 Mantle is one of those like iconic cards, and there's only a handful of those. And when people together complete sets, of like the old cards from the 50s and the 60s, that's one of the crown jewels of them. So I'm curious to see what it does go for now. What did you happen to read what the grade was on the card?
Just ask the condition.
Just the mint condition, it said. And speaking of the Honus Wagner card, the record was a 1909 Honus Wagner card that sold at auction a year ago for $6.6 million. And that was right after another 70-year-old Mantle card fetched $5.2 million. Now, these are staggering numbers. $10 million for a card. Are people doing NFTs with cards after they pay $10 million and then get 10 people to pay $1 million each to have a little piece of it?
I mean, I can see that going for big money too, the way NFTs are now. If that's going to hold up, we always talk about NFTs. I mean, it's probably going to hold up at like for some time, but I think NFTs will be around for a long time. I just don't know if they're going to get these high prices that the actual cards are getting, the tangible cards. I used the word tangible before, but it's something that you can hold in touch. There's a quality to that I think is important.
No kidding. It goes back to, you know, I couldn't tell which was more of a snake oil, NFTs or cryptocurrency. You know, you either own the thing or you don't own the thing. You either have the physical artifact or you don't. And it just sounds like somebody else, like another middleman, is just trying to insert themselves into the process, whether it's a 52 Mantle or a Honus Wagner or whatever, to get a little, you know, piece of the action. I'll never be able to afford that card, but if I get 20 of my friends together for an NFT, it just sounds like a racket.
Yeah, and people are paying for it, so I mean there is value there. I just I don't know. 15, 20 years down the road, 30 years down the road, even if it's going to be worth what you're buying it for today. Now, people are buying them and flipping them and making over 100,000 doing it, or tens of thousands at least. There are people doing that now, and I guess you have to capitalize on it while you can. I don't know if that's one of the things that you would buy and hold, as opposed to like a game worn jersey of Mike Trout or LeBron.
What about now, Lou, you mentioned that the Air Jordan flipping market has sort of softened a little bit. There's like 20 that's going for 20% less. Nick, would that be, yeah, I mean, could that be attributable to, you know, whatever it is the economy is going through now, or that we're folks are out and about and they're not trapped at home buying and flipping collectibles during a pandemic when everything was shut down and they were essentially, you know, cloistered or quarantined?
It's like the way Apple and Google and all those tech stocks were going for like 40% discounts and buying them in like May or June was people said was a good idea, because you're getting them at a 40% discount, even like sometimes. So maybe if there is ever a time to start collecting your Air Jordans, this is it. You can get in, and maybe it's not going to go to the heights it was before, but even if it goes in like in between where it was before and where it is now, you're still going to make something out of it.
Mm-hmm. Staying on the topic of shoes, I have a question for you. I do like that the NFL has that month where they allow the players to pick a non-profit and they decorate their cleats.
Oh, yeah.
They are very sweet. Those cleats, have you guys ever purchased a pair?
Because I guess what's the principle behind that, Susan? They decorate them and then they are auctioned off for the charity. Is that right?
For the charity, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's does it benefit cancer, a form of cancer?
I think it's whatever their personal, you know, foundation, or it could be their own foundation. It could be another one they support, apparently.
I know the cleats they turn out beautiful.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you guys ever purchased a pair.
Yeah, I didn't know if that stuff, once it gets out of that original auction, if it gets floated around the resale market.
And those are one of a kind. They're not like edition 1 out of 200 or 1 out of 50. Those are, there's only one made of each cleat of as far as I can tell. And we gravitate towards things that are the only one of its kind or the best known example of its kind. That's what we'd like to collect. So, I mean, those shoes actually, we don't have any in our collection, but that's a good, a good time to get into it would be this year, because I really like the idea of having a few of those.
And a tax write-off, because then your money is donated to a charity.
Wherever it comes from. I'm assuming if they're auctioned off or if they're given to the charity and the charity then possesses them and then they market them to auction. But yeah, you're right. And if you know, it's one thing to get it from, I don't want to say a run of the mill player. It's another thing to get one from, you know, someone who's a Pro Bowler or a potential Hall of Famer. I think that would be, what would those, I mean, on average, what would something like that, once they wear them in the game and then they're auctioned off by a respective foundation, let's say if it's, you know, Genera player, what would something like that go for, Nick?
Yeah, depending on the player, those prices can go really high through the roof. I mean, I could see like a guy like Justin Herbert, one of the young quarterbacks, superstars, and that people are high on, like Herbert, Allen, Burrow, the guys that are getting these, their rookie cards are going for huge amounts. I could see those like auctions, people bidding against each other and driving the price up to over 50,000 even. I don't think we would pay that much for them. I think we would try to find a good bargain, if you will. So, but quarterbacks always are gonna draw more money than any other player in the NFL. But if you can get like a receiver or an offensive lineman or a corner that you know has a good career ahead of them, or is an established player that has a good shot of making the Hall of Fame, and you could get it for a reasonable price, which is, I mean, it's relative, obviously.
Yeah.
You could get it for under 5,000. I think that would be a good buy.
So Nick, did Susan implant in your head the desire then to figure out when that game and those cleats are worn and on the market? I mean, I'm wondering if other folks leap on that sort of stuff, or they're just kind of like, oh, isn't that nice? And then they move on.
Yeah. I mean, we will pay attention to it. Definitely. I mean, that's something that I don't know why we didn't look at in the past, but there's only so much you can focus on. Sometimes it's hard to try to collect everything. That's why, I suggest like people, entry level collectors, just focus on a specific subset. Like if you want to collect every 500 home run hitter, like all of their signed baseballs or something, like start there. And then you could broaden the collection as the years go by. But yeah, I think that is a good idea. Like those cleats are definitely something that will hold their value over time.
Hey, Nick, before we go, we had John Boric on, the longtime Comcast Sportsnet, NBC Sports Philadelphia guy. I asked him what collectible he had. He said he has a 1991 autographed Nolan Ryan baseball that he got the autograph himself. I don't think he purchased it from someone. He wants to keep it, give it to his kids. What would something like that be worth?
I mean, depending on the condition of the autograph, is it personalized? If it's personalized, it's not going to go for as much.
I'm going to guess probably not.
A run-of-the-mill Nolan Ryan sticker with no inscriptions or anything, you could get between $200 and $300 for something like that.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. And again, it depends on some factors, like the condition of the ball, the condition of the signature mostly, but... if it's right, you could get between $200 and $300.
Right, so the best thing for him is to hold it, let his kids sell it 30 years from now. So
that's 30 years from now, Nolan Ryan might be the hot name.
There you go. $200 to $300 went to $200,000 to $300,000. Well, hey guys, that is all our time for this week. Our thanks to our King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DiPaccio Jr. We also want to thank our other guests, TV sports guy John Boric, Temple Hall of Famer Bill Bradshaw will join us next week, and of course, our King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DiPaccio Jr. And don't forget to buy Lou's new book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. You can get a custom autographed copy by going to themuseumofsports.org. Lou will pen it himself. Also available everywhere fine literature is sold, and a portion of the proceeds benefit the Museum of Sports. Museum of Sports show brought to you by the DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. You're seeing one of those specialists right there. For Luden Scheinfeld, Susan Baxter, Nick DiPaccio Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Lewis.
These are the good old days.
They are indeed. We'll see everybody next week. Thank you.